Good afternoon. It is a honor to be with you today and with my partner Catherine to talk to you about our more granular example of celebrating the 20 years of NCIPC. But I first want to announce two things. First, Sue Gallagher is younger than me. Not by much.
We just figured that out.
Two, I do have a relationship to disclose that she is now contributing to the economy of San Francisco this afternoon. I'm sorry? It's obtuse. Just figure it out, Richard. Okay, figure it out. I want to set the stage for what we want to talk about that we're doing in Wisconsin and specifically La Crosse. In 2007, there was a drowning of a 21-year-old student from the University of Wisconsin, La Crosse. His blood alcohol was over 300. He fell into the Mississippi River. He used to babysit for my sister's children. It was a devastating death for this family's only child. Popular, athletic, he was a terrific student. I got a call from the consortium of UW-La Crosse to approach me to be a partner in an undefined partnership. Catherine will talk to you about the consortium. I said, I will be happy to do a partnership with you under one condition. We will do one on at-risk alcohol use and abuse. Answer, absolutely. So as I invite Catherine to come up and tell you about the emerging partnership that we've had here in La Crosse for the last several years, I also want you to set the stage for Wisconsin's leadership position in alcohol consumption. For those of you who don't know this, we are leaders in alcohol consumption. There was a 1990 study from NIAAA, bars per resident, top 10 cities in the United States. Bars per resident, 7 out of the top 10 cities are in Wisconsin, including La Crosse. So I do want to set that stage for Catherine, but before I do, I want to also introduce my colleague, Peter Leight, who serves as the co-director of our Injury Research Center that we've had at the Medical College of Wisconsin since 1998. And we recognize that we've also had a strong collaborative relationship and continue to collaborate with the leadership of NCIPC because of what Sue has outlined and Rita has made mentioned in her brief remarks to start this session. So imagine now you're a student at UW-La Crosse. It's a Friday night, bars per resident. It's cheaper to drink alcohol than to have a coffee latte. So think about this as Catherine tells our story.
We all ready for Friday night in La Crosse? That's quite a setup, Steve. Well, I don't know many of you. This is my first time to APHA, so I'll introduce you to me. I'm Catherine Kolkmeyer. I'm the director of the La Crosse Medical Health Science Consortium, and we do a number of things, but this is one of our biggest projects right now. I'll tell you a little bit more about the structure of the consortium, but we are just thrilled to be the community partner in our academic community partnership with the Injury Research Center at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And that's my relationship to disclose. Let me tell you a little bit about La Crosse. Anybody ever been to La Crosse in this room? Okay, a few of you. Hey, did you go out for a drink? La Crosse is a beautiful part of the country. We are a community of about 50,000 people in the city of La Crosse, 110,000 in the county, and is the largest municipality. There's about 5 municipalities in our county. It's surrounded by rural areas, so it's a little bit isolated. That makes it more of a center for commerce, for services, for people in the surrounding rural areas. It also is home to several higher education institutions, and so we have a lot of students that are living in our area. We also have a very strong culture of alcohol, and that stems largely from our history. As Steve mentioned, Wisconsin is the heaviest drinking state in the country. La Crosse is routinely in the very top number of counties that have a binge drinking rate higher than any of the others. We have 72 counties. We're always, depending on what measure you look at, we're always in at least the top four. And so we are one of the heaviest drinking counties in the country. One of the reasons for this is our history as a brewing state. I mean, that's our baseball team, right? The Brewers. It's named for the industry that helped build the state. So in addition to being the dairy state, we are a very strong brewing tradition. La Crosse is also a brewing community. The brewery used to employ 1,700 people. I've heard stories of the spigots in the walls that people were encouraged to drink on the job. This is before OSHA, obviously. We are home to the world's largest six-pack. This is the storage tanks, and there is a sign out there. One of the things that happened is that there's a very strong sense of tradition and heritage, and most of the people in the area are of German descent. There's a lot of Norwegian influence, a lot of Scandinavian influence, and one of the things that has grown out of this are festivals and community festivals. And this, from living around the country, I've noticed this is mostly a Midwestern thing, where we have these community festivals that are mostly harvest-based, and the biggest one being Oktoberfest, you see here. This is the annual event known as the Tapping of the Golden Keg. It is the kickoff event for the Oktoberfest, which is our biggest community festival. But in the warmer months, and we do have warmer months in Wisconsin, in case you're wondering, you can go to a community festival pretty much every weekend. I think we've counted 20 in the county of La Crosse, and these all celebrate various things, but almost all of them have most of their fundraising events for the community. Most of them make their money through alcohol sales, largely through beer. And so when you have that combination of young people heavy drinking and tolerance for heavy drinking, you can end up with tragedy, as Steve mentioned. The young man that Steve mentioned was one of eight that we had lost over a period of time. This gives you an idea of what we're talking about. Between 97 and 2007, we lost eight college-age men. We have now lost nine, but we've only had, this sounds terrible to say only, but we've only lost one young man to drowning since 2009. With very high blood alcohol counts, drowning in the Mississippi River. And if you look at the topography, you can't really see the slope of it, but the Mississippi River is what we're based on. Standing up, sorry. So we have three college campuses. These yellow blobs are the college campuses. This is only a mile or two away from the downtown area. All of our college campuses are fairly small. These are not giant state institutions, and so there isn't really a college-based retail outlet area. I mean, I went to big state schools. We had The Hill. We had The Strip. You know, these are the places where the students go and they spend their money. That doesn't happen in La Crosse because the campuses aren't big enough, and so everybody goes downtown, and the students and the older population drink together. In downtown, we have a rate of more than 60 bars in a 15-block area. It's all downhill. That sounds inconsequential, but when you are severely incapacitated and you're trying to figure out where to go, you go downhill. And when you get to the Mississippi River, because of the flood wall that was built in 65, the current is fierce. You don't wade into the Mississippi River. It cuts out from under you and you're gone. So this all works together to give you the idea of what we're dealing with in our community. I also mentioned that there was a lot of denial in our community. This is, like I said, very, very strong tradition, strong history, and a lot of people have been watching a lot of television the last 10, 20 years and started thinking that this must be the work of a serial killer because these are young men. They're all the same age. They're all students. They're all athletes. That can't possibly be left to chance. But as a friend told me in the alcohol addiction world, the young men don't stick together, which is true. They don't watch out for each other when they go out. Athletes can handle a lot higher alcohol content than the rest of us. We'd all be passed out, but they can still go because they've got strong bodies. And young men, they're all 21. They're all drinking legally for the first time. So there's a lot of things that played into this. But we had to overcome a lot of doubt, and there still is a lot of doubt, especially among students. The early response to some of these events there were a lot of things that happened, but they weren't centrally coordinated. These kind of happened all over the place. A little bit, I indicated where these were, a little bit in government, a little bit on campus, a little bit in the community. But none of these were a community-wide effort that brought all of the different sectors of the community together. And there was not a lot of community input other than the town hall meeting where everyone accused the police of not looking at the evidence of the serial killer. So what grew from this situation was this community-wide partnership that Steve mentioned and this collaboration that began in 2007 with our academic partner, the Medical College of Wisconsin's Injury Research Center and the Health Science Consortium. The consortium has seven partners. It had five at the time, but it has seven now, three higher education institutions, two healthcare organizations, the Public Health Department, and the School District of La Crosse. We are all partners in population health improvement and in healthcare workforce issues, and this was a wonderful way to pull together many, many different players on a single team. And I'm going to call out the person who helped put all this together is in the room with us, Dr. Brenda Rooney, who is an epidemiologist at Gunderson Lutheran, one of our medical partners, who was really at the forefront of this and announced to me the day I started the job, we just got a grant to do some alcohol work. So. We also brought in several community organizations, our local addiction center, our cooperative education service agency, law enforcement has been a wonderful part of our team. We've been really happy to have them involved, as well as youth, parents, students, you name it. As Steve mentioned, and Steve, would you like to step in here?
No, I think as the story is unfolding, one of the challenges was to start this process with the cultural background that Catherine's just outlined in a way that gets everyone collaborating together. And the public health model is an ideal way to do that, whether it be firearm-related injuries, violence, unintentional injuries. The public health approach gets everyone coming together and looking at this in a different way and brings everyone together as colleagues, including some of the folks that Catherine's going to be talking about. So it's, I think, a testimony to the years of leadership that CDC has brought to the injury issues that the public health approach has independent advantages and power that we leveraged in our partnership.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So La Crosse, being the size that it is and being somewhat on its own out in western Wisconsin, we're not Madison, we're not Milwaukee, being a sort of a self-contained place, it's a wonderful place for collaborations to form and to sustain the work that goes on there. We're well known for our collaborative efforts in the community. And when you have situations where law enforcement are being accused of not doing their job and there's a lot of finger pointing, that's generally the old model. That's how you get through a situation is you just blame and blame and blame and nobody ever fixes anything. Using the public health model and framing this issue as a public health issue is how we united our community. We're not interested in all gathering together everybody on one side and then accusing the bars of wrongdoing or accusing the students of wrongdoing or accusing the festivals of wrongdoing. They have to be on our team too. And so you're all familiar with this model, I imagine, and what we have put most of our focus on so that it is not a blame game. It's not us against the alcohol industry. It's not us against the drinkers. It's trying to change the choices by working with the environmental issues, working with evidence-based strategies as much as possible. So our first step, we received funding through our partnership from the Healthier Wisconsin Partnership Program, which is a funding source through the Medical College of Wisconsin. And our first stage was a planning grant, and we needed to assess first we needed to build a team, and that's where we built our coalition. The name of our project was the Changing the Culture of Risky Drinking Behavior, and that's exactly what we're trying to do is change our culture, not give up the heritage, not give up the tradition, but change the culture of tolerance. So we had to isolate this problem. How do we figure out what exactly we're talking about? What are the numbers? And so Brenda was a huge part of putting this together. She was our author, along with the Injury Research Center, on a written burden of alcohol use and injury report. We just recently updated that just last week, and Steve's going to go into some of that information towards the end. that really told us what we were dealing with. What is the cost of this type of behavior and this sort of culture on our community? Then we identified some of the solutions. We looked at all the agencies, all the programs, all the organizations that are involved with treating alcohol abuse, but also with injury prevention and alcohol misuse prevention. And then we've created a strategic plan over 5 years to help fill the gaps. What do we need that's going to address the rest of the problem that's not being dealt with? So the burden of alcohol-related injury report, you can see some of the data that was used there. We also did a community perception survey. This was a random household paper survey that was also just repeated this year. And there should be a little star next to the burden report. Both of these were used to inform the implementation strategies that we put into our strategic plan. So what we tried to do in approaching this situation was a balance of strategies. We had to start with information, we had to start with education, and work our way towards policy. So we had to get people aware of the situation, but then we also had to get some practices changed. We had to get some projects put into place and gradually build a groundwork. And you'll see as we go along how we built a foundation on which we could then base policy changes. Because if you walk in and do the policy changes first, that obviously isn't going to work, and it's also not going to be sustainable. So this is a way that we were able to build a framework. We've been able to leverage many funding sources in our community. We've received, as I mentioned, the planning grant from the Healthier Wisconsin Partnership Program. They followed that up with a 3-year grant for underage drinking specifically, and we were able to match that with, or partially match that with, a grant from our State Department of Health Services. So focusing on binge drinking, we received that because we were the top binge drinking county in the state. So they just said, here, sign here, here's your money. We were also able to acquire a drug-free communities grant and other grants in our area, including law enforcement specific grants that all address this issue. And rather than everybody doing it all on their own, we meet as a regular group together to talk about how all of the different grants can leverage one another so we're not stepping on each other's toes. Just some of the strategies that are in place through all of these different efforts. These are not all our project, but throughout our community, these are the ones that are focused on alcohol specifically. The host being the folks who are drinking, we've had a number of interactions with students, with young people, trying to provide some funding for them to take the initiative and get involved in the work in our community. But mostly, like I said, we focused on environmental strategies, and some of these will look familiar to you. These are mostly evidence-based strategies that are well-known. But in some cases, we didn't have evidence to work on, or there was very limited evidence, and we needed to create our own. And that is where the festivals came into play. I know the Alcohol Epidemiology Project in Minnesota that many of you heard about this morning has information on how festivals can be run differently so that they are a safer place. But we, Brenda and our team worked on an assessment process for working with festivals and creating an evidence base for our own community that is now being used as a model throughout the state of Wisconsin. So here's an example of one of those non-evidence-based projects that we did. That there's really a public relations effort. During Oktoberfest, which, as I said, is the largest festival in our community, it's a 10-day event. It used to be a 3-day event. It brings in between 100 and 200,000 people into the community. If you remember at the beginning, I said there are 110,000 people in the county of Wisconsin, or the county of La Crosse. So it basically almost doubles the size of the county for a few days. One of the kickoff events, in addition to the Golden Keg, is the Maple Leaf Parade, which is held on the first Saturday. And because of the sheer number of people who are in the area and the focus on drinking, it's impossible for our local law enforcement to enforce local drinking ordinances, the not drinking in public, not drinking in the open. And so it's pretty much a free-for-all. And what we decided to start a couple of years ago, thank you, is the family zone. And this is an alcohol-free, smoke-free stretch of the parade route where families could bring their children once again, because they had all stopped bringing their children to the parade because it was such a mess, and having an area where people could sit and enjoy the parade without the emphasis on alcohol. It was not just to provide a location for people to enjoy the parade, it was more to start a community conversation. and that brings around one of the most important parts of our efforts is that we have a wonderful relationship with our local media, and they have been tremendously helpful in letting us get the word out and understanding what we're trying to do and the approach that we're taking, that we're not coming in and pointing fingers. We're trying to bring people together to solve these issues, and they've been very helpful in promoting efforts like this, like the Family Zone. We just completed our second Family Zone. The first one we had 450 people come. The second one, which was just a couple of weeks ago, it was about, was it 2 weeks ago? Just a few weeks ago, end of October. End of September, we had 750 people that we estimated. I imagine there were probably more than that. So as you've seen as we've gone along, we've really been beginning with the funding that we've received. We started with building practices and programs, trying to change some of those practices, trying to get some of the would-be opponents brought on board to work with us. And each of those practices and those programs is laying the groundwork for policy changes. So if you look at those related to underage drinking, we've now done many years of a Parents Who Host Lose the Most campaign, which is an underage drinking law campaign, and town hall meetings to talk about underage drinking. That lays the groundwork for social host ordinances to be put into place. Changing the practices and getting festivals to adopt best practices that are safe helps us with changing the way the temporary B licenses, so these are the licenses that festivals have to serve alcohol, it can help change how that works, and that's what we're working on now, is that license process and what's involved in that. Partners for a Safe Lacrosse is a program that we started as a tavern recognition program. This is a way that we've been working with the taverns that have safe practices in place and encouraging them to continue that and to promote that among other tavern owners, and by recognizing them, it shows those who are patronizing those locations that this is a place where safety is held in important place. And that's really helping us with building up a groundswell of support among tavern owners, so that when we try to help restrict the way licenses are put together, they will be on our team. So if we imagine going into a city council meeting with tavern owners with us saying we'd like to strengthen our alcohol licenses, we feel like that's going to be a much stronger sell than if we just come in with parents of kids. Ultimately, what we would like to see in terms of sustainability is an alcohol license review board, and this could be something that is part government, part private, part community, part business community, and everybody working together to make sure that our licenses are maintained, that they have good conditions on them, and that they're being reviewed on a regular basis. We're also getting into some education areas where we're trying to work with community leaders to make sure they understand the process of us bringing everybody on board up front, and that this isn't something we're imposing on everyone else. This is something that's been a real culture change. It's come from the community. It's been sort of instigated from underneath, and that will help sustain the effort, because if people understand why, then they will help support it in the future. So, key lessons. I think I just covered them. But the key lessons are that it does take everybody. You can't leave anybody behind, because then they become the opposition. And it is important to include everyone. By using the public health approach, we were able to bring our would-be opponents onto our team to help support different parts of the project. I've always said, if we disagree on 100 points and we agree on one, let's work on that one. And we can disagree on the other 100 at another time, but right now we need to work on that one. Media influence must be leveraged. It's really important for us to have, as a small community, to have our media on board, and they really have been. I mentioned the Family Zone, that it wasn't just about having that event. It was about getting a conversation started at the community level, and that happened through the media. It got people saying, why do we have a section where you can't drink instead of having a section where you can? And that's an important question to be asked by a community of itself. So here's an example of that. This was an editorial just from last September, right before Oktoberfest of this year. And we had a young man who disappeared one night after a night of drinking. He was in town visiting his brother, I believe. He had an amazing amount of alcohol of all different kinds, pre-gaming before he went downtown, and then got an all-you-could-drink wristband from one of the bars and disappeared in the middle of the night. being lacrosse, having our history, the very first thing that happened the next morning when his brother reported it at 7 a.m., by 10 o'clock there were boats on the river out looking for this young man. That wouldn't happen in another community, but that's what we're used to. We're used to losing them in the river. They found this young man. He was sleeping. 5 minutes, thank you. He was sleeping, in somebody's house or somebody's car. I can't remember. In a parked car, that's right. Didn't know anybody was looking for him. Didn't know that he was missed. But the entire community was paying attention and wondering where he was. And so that gives you an idea of the culture that we're dealing with. We put boats on the river right away. And so that's what prompted this editorial saying, it starts out by saying, you'll have to pardon the lacrosse community for being a bit raw, a bit cautious, and more than a bit tired of the fallout from binge drinking. If nothing else, we know the drill. Launch the rescue boat and pray for the best. That's how it starts. So this is our editorial board at our local newspaper. They're very much a partner of ours. So next steps in terms of leveraging our support, we've received quite a bit of funding for implementing our practices, getting everything ready for policy change. We have just been very fortunate to receive 5 more years of funding through the Healthier Wisconsin Partnership Program to continue our community academic partnership and focus specifically on policy change. And I'm going to invite Steve to come back, since I've been hogging the microphone, to talk about what we're planning next.
Thanks, Catherine. So this is give you an example of the 5-plus years that we've been collaborating to position ourselves for another 5 years of change. And it's fortunate to be able to have that continuous type of funding to be able to do this, because as you can imagine, changing the culture of a community such as lacrosse is not something you can do with a 2-year grant, even a 3-year grant. This is something we have to be together in the long haul. And the Injury Research Center and our group at the center brought the science, the injury science, to the community, partnering with them, with the public health model, starting with, I think, a good example of sort of a granular case study, what Sue described in a broader way of starting with the data, starting with what's happening in the community, and gathering the evidence base to begin that discussion that the community needs to have in order to change the social norms and address at-risk alcohol and alcohol abuse. So this partnership that we've been talking about is truly one that's back and forth, and we get informed by all parties, and the parties on the far right there, as you can see, are the essential partners that I felt was quite important to have as part of an effort that's going to make change, including the trauma centers that are in the community. And I think that's an important element. My background is in emergency medicine, and alcohol-related injuries permeate emergency departments all over the country, not just limited to La Crosse or Milwaukee, where I practiced for the last over 30 years. So some preliminary data that Brenda and her team have put together as part of the second alcohol report is that we're starting to see some change. It's small. We are encouraged that we're in the right direction, and that in the end of another 4 years, we're going to look at this again to see if we're going in the right direction, really making a real change in both emergency department visits and hospitalizations. Everybody wants to reduce emergency department visits. Great. It's going to take a lot of work to do it, particularly in this area. And with La Crosse residents and other counties, in terms of other related events that we want to also impact, such as motor vehicle crashes, again, we're starting to go in the right direction to impact alcohol-related injury in La Crosse County and potentially be serving as a model for the state. And the deaths occurring in La Crosse County from motor vehicle crashes to drownings, as Catherine mentioned, in these study periods, we've seen again a decrease. Again, one life is obviously one that we don't want to see happen at all, but we're seeing this in the right direction as we're comparing and contrasting these trended data. So visit our poster session on Tuesday. There's the session number, working with festival organizers to reduce binge drinking in Midwestern community. That gets to Catherine's point of there was no evidence in terms of what to do with these festivals. It's a distinctive cultural aspect of La Crosse County, and the team went into did the surveys and have been working with the community organizers, and it's serving as now generating the evidence that may impact other communities. So we're delighted to be able to tell this granular story in the context of Sue's wonderful summaries over the years of the key elements that have driven the science and driven the partnership with a national organization such as the National Center for Injury Prevention and Control. So, thank you.
Thank you. These are wonderful presentations. We have about 20 minutes left, so hope you saved up your questions. Andrea?
Thank you for a wonderful session. Everybody you talked was just terrific. I wanted to make a comment about the alcohol example and then a question. That's just such a fabulous story. I hope there's an opportunity to write it up as a case study so that we can all learn from it and apply what's the process that you went through to other issues. It's really, thank you for sharing it. And then the question about it is, in addition to sort of saying, here's what we did, if we could learn from your expertise about the how it worked, that would be awesome. And are you getting that kind of information along the way? And in particular, I'm curious about the kind of compromises that you might have had to make along the way. When you said the thing about 100, the things we disagree on and one that we can agree on, and so what's that compromise process like?
Well, thank you. We were just talking about that over the last several days, of the fact that we need to write up where we are so far, because it is it's a work in progress, but we're definitely going to put something together, because we do need to tell this story, even though it's not a finished story. It never will be. So thank you for that comment. Yes, there have been a lot of compromises, and my favorite new phrase that I use all the time is that community collaboration is messy. And it really is. You can't always predict what's going to happen. You can't even plan out a project and expect it to go the way you've planned it out. And so, because the political will, the community events, I mean, if we have a drowning this weekend, that's going to change the focus of this project. You know, that there are a lot of different things that we have to work with a moving target quite a lot. But in terms of sharing the how, it's messy. Yeah, it's complicated trying to make sure that we're always keeping everybody informed. The players change. I think this year, this calendar year, we've lost 4 members of our team because of someone getting another job, somebody changing the scope of their position. The funding changed a little bit, so we changed people's roles. It's been interesting because we have to bring new people in with different skill sets and. Sometimes our focus runs a little bit in that direction of just trying to figure out what kind of talent we can bring in and what they're going to be able to bring to the team. Right now we're working with individual councils, and I mentioned there are 5 municipalities, and we're going to put most of our effort into 4 of them. One of them is very, very small, and each one has a different flavor. Each one has a different approach, and we have to tailor what we're going to do moving forward based on the personality of that municipality, because they all have different personalities and have different levels of interest, and also are looking at the other municipalities to see what they're going to do. So it's a matter of getting all of that into play. I don't know if that answers your question.
And I just want to follow up too, Andrea, that one of the things that I was impressed with was the consortium. The consortium is distinctive. 3 universities and 2 health systems, if you will, that are working together towards broad health issues in not only La Crosse County, but in the surrounding counties. And so when they were approached and they agreed to address the injury problem, we felt that this was a good starting point, a strong partnership of organizations that had been working together for several years prior to our project. So we felt that that was one to help us sustain the efforts and to go this over time, and that's part of the story we want to tell now versus 5 years from now. The story is, boy, we've really had a sustained impact that's resulting in true social norm changes in this county and maybe perhaps others to do that. So for those of you who may not be aware of the source of this money, in Wisconsin, the Blue Cross Blue Shield turned a private, that conversion of monies had in other states such as California resulted in the California Wellness Foundation. In Wisconsin, that $600 million was actually turned to UW-Madison's Medical School and the Medical College of Wisconsin. That resulted in this Advancing Healthier Wisconsin, the Healthier Wisconsin Partnership Program that Catherine's been alluding to and referencing as a source of the funding that we then partnered to apply for and through a peer review process obtained the funding stream. So it's an important element of our funding stream. So I'm not
Thank
sure
you. What, no, I think that's great. Why don't we move on to the next question? I know, thank you, wonderful. I know our colleague Peter here has a question. How about when you stand up to ask the question, just say your name and where you're from?
Okay, so I'm Peter Donnelly. I'm a professor of public health medicine at the University of St Andrews in Scotland. And Scotland has a bit of a drinking issue.
single malt.
I always joke with the students that the best reason for Russia existing is that it makes our drinking stats look okay. And now we're the substitute Wisconsin for Russia. So I sympathise with your problem. We have a very similar issue. But the comment I wanted to make is that myself, David Williams, Fergus Neville, sitting at the back there, most of our work's around violence and violence reduction, which in Scotland is very alcohol. And we recently had occasion, as part of that, to survey our own students at the University of St Andrews about drinking. And two things, we were deeply shocked how much they drank. We thought we knew, but my goodness, did they drink a lot. But the second thing, and this in a way was more unpredictable and interesting, was that if you ask them how comfortable they are with the drinking culture, they will give you a certain answer from their own perspective. But if you ask them how comfortable they think everybody else is, they think everybody else is more comfortable. Okay?
Yeah.
And it's quite an interesting finding. So in other words, everybody on an individual basis would like the place to be a bit less drunken. But they assume they're being killjoys and that everybody else is really quite happy with it. You know? And I think there's some quite interesting lessons there for the way we approach it. And so my question was, I just wondered whether you had any data of that type from your community. Because it may be that there's quite a lot of people who are not happy with the way things are.
Right.
We do, and we have quite a few different sources at all different ages. One of them is the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. Also the BRFS, I'm going to have to try to remember all of these acronyms. This is Brenda's field, as the epidemiologist. But there are surveys at the adult level. There are surveys in the school systems. And then we've also been conducting our community perception survey, which is asking people right in La Crosse County, what is your, do you think that alcohol is a problem and how much? Do you think that underage drinking is a problem and how much? You know, and talking about festivals. And so we've been able to tailor that survey to be very specific. And we do have a lot of results. Well, you'll see them in the Burden Report. And I put this up and realized I didn't put our website on it, but it's lacrosseconsortium.org. And I would invite you to go and visit the Burden Report and some of the other documentation that we have. It has a lot of very, very good data, and we've been finding the very same thing. I had a professor friend tell me that he had asked his students with the little clickers that give you an instant response, what's the percentage of students that use cocaine? And the answer that came up was 50%. He said, how many of you have ever tried cocaine? Zero.
Yeah.
You know, that right there, you just make this huge message to the students of what the reality is.
Very good. Thank you. And there is a literature on social norming, and there's actually been quite a number of alcohol studies. You ask, how many drinks do you have when you party? How many drinks do you think your average, say, Arizona State student has when they party? And there's usually quite a big discrepancy.
Yeah.
The gentleman with the glasses.
Hi, my name is Omar Hopkins. I'm a student at the University of Wisconsin.
Hey.
So I recently did a study on the externality of traffic related injury among alcohol in Wisconsin. Shockingly, just doing the literature review, finding that Wisconsin traffic related fatality is higher than the nation. But also, you were looking at the results, I mean, I found it really shocking. that Wisconsin is among, I think, 20 states that does not allow sobriety checkpoints. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's really counterintuitive that either the state or the most recent happened did not even try. I don't know if they've tried it in the past or not. So I guess my question is, since you mentioned earlier that you did have great media support, have you guys tried looking at a policymaker to sort of gain some leverage in
it? I'm sorry, what is your point? Wisconsin, it's an extraordinary environment for this issue, which is, from my experience working with the National Rifle Association, working with the Wisconsin Tavern League, very, very similar. Mm-hmm. And in fact, much more interesting, because mayors own taverns. Mm-hmm. It's a place for people to come. It's a big part of the culture of Wisconsin. So to your point, though, of these other statewide policies, what we're hoping to do during these next 4 years is partner with those who are taking on statewide policies to be partners with them. And we already have a group that is statewide that has been generated by UW's hospital and the medical school to start looking at statewide policies. So we're just starting. Just so you know, the complexities, you may well know, there was an introduction of a 25-cent tax for a six-pack of beer. That's the first time it ever got a committee hearing since 1969. Wisconsin's the lowest taxed state other than Wyoming and Missouri. Missouri, I can understand. Wyoming, they just don't do it. So it's a big deal to try to get other policies statewide. We tried to do drunk driving. As you know, the first offense of a drunk driving is a civil offense. It's not even a felony. So we've got a lot of work to do, and again, state efforts get, I think, further advanced when you have local legislators seeing how these things play out in their communities, that they are more comfortable advancing at the state level. So we might see some changes over the next couple of years. It just takes a lot of work.
Great. Your great questions. I don't know who is next. How about the gentleman right in my view here?
Chuck Cobra, West Virginia University. This is a question calling Sue. Maybe others as well. We'll talk a little bit about the history of NCIPC and the success of the field over the last 40 years, which I think is tremendous. I have concerns about the future. I'd like to share some of those concerns to keep you thinking about that. We're seeing budget cuts, shrinking of resources available, still a lot of missing information about the field. So we've talked about strategies. I think I question whether or not it's time to get back to the Institute of Medicine and have another report done about the status of the field. I see a lot of additional challenges for our field in terms of mass casualty events that will likely occur in the future. I think we need to have a greater emphasis on enhancing the resources available to the field. So I'll just open that up. I'd like to get some perspective.
I totally agree with your comments, Jeff. I mean, because it is an issue. It's been around for more than 30 years, being able to sustain what we do, given the political and economic realities. I do think we're doing a better job of providing visibility to our success. And I think success breeds success, and I think it also breeds champions. And when you have champions, you have a lot better chance, I think, of being able to deal with some of those concerns that you have. But I think, you know, demonstrating the value of what we do has not been a priority in the past. That's just my perception. So demonstrating that value and also getting it out to the public is one area. I think we have had more success in changing some of the social norms and pointing that out to policymakers, again, I think is important. But I also think the whole is advocacy. We as a field have been kind of dragging our feet on doing the kind of advocacy that we really should be doing. I do want to point out the document produced by Trust for America's Health, which came out in the last year and is a legislative report card, but covers a lot of other areas too. That's like could be an incredible tool in doing advocacy for the field. And I don't know how many of us have really jumped on using that as a tool. But that's a success story because we had an organization that's an advocacy organization that deals with a lot of health issues. Injury and violence was never on their radar screen. And both Safe States Alliance and SABR got together inviting the executive director of that association to come and address the annual meeting that they had. And that really opened dialogue, I think gained visibility or gained the interest of that key individual that at least championed this one effort. And we need to do more and more of that. We need to reach out to people that don't know anything about the field and capture their interest and get them to be champions. So there's no easy solutions, and I think the more creative we can be thinking out of the box, the better off we're going to be. But I also think we need to embrace other disciplines and their successes and bring those disciplines in and adapt what they've done to our field. So that's some of my thoughts. But the advocacy issue, we need to really address that.
So Jeff, to build on your great question, yeah. I too agree with Sue about the necessity of bringing other disciplines. We certainly can do a better job than what we've had done in the past, and the trauma centers are a great example. They're obligated and necessary to do injury prevention, and we need to do a better job of engaging them proactively. Our field, I think, is fragmented. The traumatic brain injury field is not intimately linked with the American Public Health Association's injury section. There's a lot of fragmentation here, even in this conference, that injury is being discussed in various forms and places, and we're not working together as effectively as we can and should be towards goals. Mm-hmm. I think the funding issue is a big deal, and so we need to hopefully get NCIPC more robust funding as a leading agency here in the United States.
Thank you. We have 3 minutes left. I think everybody in this room probably has a lot of thoughts about what you just said, and it would be great to have a forum where we can maybe talk more about that. You know, one lesson that we're trying to learn, or a few lessons we're trying to learn from the Chronic Disease Center at CDC, which tripled or quadrupled over maybe a decade. Their former director said, you know, we don't go around talking about chronic disease. We went after cancer, and we had particular advocates and organizations, and we talked about cancer. We talked about heart disease. So there's even conversations like that. How do we talk about injury and violence? So there's an incredible array of things that we even touch. And we're also talking a lot about telling more powerful stories. I mean, these are stories that are in the news. They touch everybody. They're incredibly moving. The burden is gigantic. So I think there's really just there are a lot of challenges. We're aware of them. But we also are optimistic about several things. So just in the interest of time, though, I know Lenora had her hand up, and I thought I want to make sure you get a little airtime.
It's a great question, Lenora. I'm not sure I know where the tipping point is. What I do know is in the past, when we were able to get policymakers interested, in areas sometimes we just, you know, totally backed off on them. I think that a lot of the strategies and regs that are being proposed for sports injuries and the return to play really are based on evidence, but the interventions themselves aren't proven. It's just like, you know, bicycle helmets, we got the strategy about the button, you know, the helmets, but then you have to figure out what's the best intervention and way to do it. So I think that's where we are with TBI. That's kind of the quick answer to your question.
Okay, we have 1 minute left. If you guys are really ambitious, we can squeeze in one more. Or we can say, look at us, we finished early. Woohoo! Okay, well, thank you so much. Thanks for your engagement and wonderful questions.